Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
This is Leslie Kane, and you're listening to That UFO Podcast.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to That UFO Podcast. As always, my name is Andy, and this is your listener ramble show, part one for this week. I think you can expect three or four shows at least dropping this week. Sorry if it dropped off a little bit last week, but last minute, a couple of guests had to move things about. There will be a breakdown, there will be a couple of listener rambles, and there will be a guest interview this week as well, with Stephen Bassett joining me once again on the show. And Stephen's a wonderful character and a wonderful guy to listen to. Not always one that everyone agrees with, but he's certainly in the mix when it comes to the conversation. And I'm really intrigued to hear his thoughts. So if you've got any questions for Stephen Bassett, please send me them over ASAP. The best place to do that, use the email UFOUAPAM@gmail.com or use that UFOpodcast.com and use the contact form. However, for part one of the listener ramble this week, I've got three callers for you. We've got Isaiah, the host of UFO Focus Podcast, talking about Matthew Brown, whistleblower, and also what constitutes evidence. I've got William talking about books being written to get around DOPSER, especially from former government, army folks, CIA, etc. And then Nick joins me again, previous caller. He comes back on to talk about Matthew Brown's recent tweet, which I've not covered yet on the podcast. I read through that, which isn't the easiest thing to read through, folks. We talk about the Collins Elite, summoning objects, entities, shadow cabals. That's a really good call as well. All different calls this week, all great calls. Thank you so much for everyone who took part. There are more calls coming this week. I'm busy recording. I have spent all day of my Sunday recording these. If you want to get involved, please send over an email or use the website contact form, and then I can get to you and I can either arrange a call or read out your question or points. So thank you so much for everyone who's got involved so far. Let's get straight to the calls. Joining me now on the line, I have the host of the UFO Focus Podcast, Isaiah. Isaiah, how are we doing?
Very good. Thank you, Andy. It's nice to meet you in person, so to speak. And I want to wish you congratulations on 5 years of podcasting. That's it's a real achievement.
Yeah, it feels it sometimes as well. It feels a lot longer in a lot of different ways. It was doing the Omnibus show this week, putting out some of the author interviews. And I was looking back and there was stuff that I could have sworn was like 6 months ago and it was like 2022. And I was like, oh my God, that's like 2-3 years getting on to now. So time flies when you're doing this kind of stuff. And also obviously congratulations to you. You've got a, more importantly than a podcast, a new baby in the house.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, no, two exciting things among others. But yeah, thank you. Life is good right now.
Yeah, both of them cause sleepless nights, late nights,
right,
and short mornings. So, but listen, loads to talk about. And the floor is very much over to you, Isaiah. What we're talking about today?
Well, we can talk about whatever you like, Andy. I recently did a little mini series on Matthew Brown and Immaculate Constellation, and put up a related post on Reddit about that, sort of sharing some of my own takeaway, so we could talk about that. Maybe start with that.
Good place to start.
Okay.
Now, you sent me an email on Matthew Brown a couple of weeks ago when you were looking to discuss some of these points. And let me just summarize it, and you can correct me here if I'm wrong, Isaiah.
Yeah.
Okay. Some of the points you made were around you thought the interview with Corbell and Knapp, and I'll be fair, you mentioned to me before we hit record, you really enjoyed Jeremy Corbell, George Knapp, their presentation, what they do. But you felt the interview lacked any context and clarity. Some of the key background information perhaps around Matthew Brown was missing that could have been there. Is that fair?
Yes, that's fair. Yeah, I mean, to some extent, this part of my critique is a little bit more stylistic, but, you know, especially for somebody who, like me, who really, like you, I believe, enjoys the audio format and, you know, really values audio as a medium. If you were just listening to it, you know, but also if you were watching the video, it sort of starts in the middle of nowhere, and we have to, it's almost like you had to pick up the pieces and try and sort of figure out along the way, like, who is this guy again? Like, what did he do? And, you know, part of the way I think about it is sort of like, if I wanted to forward this to my mother, how could I do it, right? I'd have to explain. I'd say, well, it's these two guys, and they're journalists, but they're sort of renegade journalists, and they're interviewing this guy, and I don't quite understand who he is, even though I listened to 3 hours of an interview. And I think that they could have, and they should have packaged it a little bit more like a traditional article, where you sort of begin with the basics. You say, like, okay, you know, we are interviewing this person. Their background is such and such, and their main argument is X, Y, Z. And, you know, you start with the lead. It's called an inverted pyramid structure in journalism. And you start with the most important stuff up top, and then you sort of work your way down. That's more of a stylistic critique, but, you know, I think it's harmful to the topic when, like I said, when some of the people who, in my opinion, are doing some of the best journalism in this topic, when they're not putting it out in a way that is easy to share with somebody who's not already tuned into this stuff.
Right. That's a very fair point, and you've made it well. I can go either way on this one, and I think I mentioned this before on a breakdown or an interview, that you can get your whistleblower release through a mainstream news station. And I think, for example, we had Jake Barber on with Ross Coulthart. That was maybe a little bit in between. You've had these, like David Grush as well, went quite mainstream with his, you know, coming forward and everything else as well. Corbell and Knapp, it was almost more for the initiated, a little bit more for the UFO community. And it's one of those, what would you rather, and I'll ask you this question, would you rather you get 3 hours with a brand new whistleblower next week, and it's Corbell and Knapp going into it in the same style we got the Matthew Brown information, or would you rather a whistleblower sat down in front of Congress that can answer certain things, won't answer other things, and maybe is getting questions thrown at them that you may have less of an interest in hearing the answer to? Where do you sit with that?
Oh, I would take Congress. I would take testimony in Congress over 12 hours of interview any day, because I think the quality of, this is something else we might talk about, but I think the quality of the resulting evidence is so much greater. You know, I think part of, if we take David Grush by comparison, part of what makes Grush so important to the topic is obviously what he has to say. But another part is how he said it and in what conditions. I mean, the fact that he's been before Congress and spoken both under oath, which means it's highly unlikely he's lying on purpose, but also he's spoken carefully and with a lot of preparation. You know, you can take David Grush's testimony to the bank in a way that you can't with Matthew Brown. And I should say, the bigger part of my critique really was that Corbell and Knapp in the Matthew Brown interview again, they let him sort of go on these, I don't want to call them tangents, but
I get what you mean. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he sort of goes off on these things that don't actually in any obvious way relate. So I'm sorry, I should give an example. He talks about like a cabal, an international cabal of people controlling information about UAP. And look, I don't have any opinion about whether that's the case or not, really, but like, that's not what his report really said. And that's not what his own story about his own investigation doesn't give us any reason to believe that he discovered that. So it was sort of unclear, like, is this just his interpretation or opinion? And Corbell and Knapp didn't press him at those moments. And I think they should have, or they should have just not included some of that stuff, perhaps, in the interview. So my point might be getting lost here. But
No, not at all. It's all relative. It reminds me, I suppose, then, one, you mentioned about the way someone comes across. David Grush spoke in a way that I don't think many people could. I think that he holds himself so well and he speaks so eloquently. I don't think most whistleblowers coming forward would sound or speak or present themselves like that, just because they probably couldn't. Matthew Brown came across, I think, quite natural, but to your point around some of the claims he made, I would be curious to ask Jeremy or George around the editing of the interview. That, are we watching an interview that happened chronologically? So it's in three parts. Are we seeing each part, each question and each answer as it was asked and as it was laid out? How much editing? Not that it was edited in a malicious way, but, you know, are there elements of the conversation taken out, removed, or is the placing of a question moved from part two to part one? Is there something that would have been early on in part one moved to part three? I don't know, but we don't know that yet. And maybe that's some of the context and clarity you'd be looking for that would help. And the third thing for me, it reminds me, I suppose, more then of when Jason Sands came forward in a Twitter or X space. He just spoke for, was it a 4-hour space or something? And he had all these claims. But as he has since gone on to confirm with me and other people and online, a lot of that was speculation and opinion. And he shared things. These are just my thoughts. These are my thoughts based on research. These are my thoughts based on experience. These are my thoughts based on speculation, but informed speculation. But it all rolled into one because there was no control mechanism. There was no journalist on the other side of it to kind of rein that in and, you know, quantify things. Maybe we got a little bit of everything with Matthew Brown. Perhaps, like you say, for you, and if that's the way it's came across for you, it will have done that for other people. In the same way for me, looking back on the Jake Barber story, I love the presentation. I think News Nation, Ross Coulthart done a great job. I enjoyed the longer form of that more than the short form, because I think it gave us more room to breathe and a lot of context, again, to mention your point that was missing. But there were things that were claimed that just didn't quite make as much sense as they perhaps have later, or looking back on it, maybe got a bit muddled up in the story. And I think that can lay at the door of the editors or who is involved, too many cooks spoil the broth, all that kind of stuff. Is that fair?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think that you can we can distinguish between what is kind of interesting to listen to in the moment and what is the best presentation by a journalist, especially a professional journalist. Well, forget the word professional, but by a journalist of the best information that the journalist has sort of uncovered and is prepared to put forward. So, I mean, you know, it's interesting, right? I mean, if you look back at the famous, infamous 2017 New York Times story that got so many people, including myself, interested in the topic, you know, for real. It's a weird story. I mean, the actual headline has to do with you know, funding appropriated for ATIP and
black budget
and
money. Yeah,
black budget. Yeah, that's, thank you. Yes, black budget money. It's not at all obvious that what they're talking about is sort of where we wound up getting to. But at the same time, so I don't know why I'm bringing that up. It's not the best example, but but I guess I bring it up just to say that, you know, there's something to be said for curation by journalists, right? There's something to be said for not just putting everything out there, even though people say that's what they want. But I think sometimes the job of the journalist is to really hone the story and explain, like, okay, here are the facts that I have gathered. Here is speculation. I have, you know, I have gathered, and that's separate from the facts, and to kind of make sure that things are put out in a way that is intelligible and that holds water when people come to critique it.
So I want to raise another point you made, because I think this is, again, very fair. And I've talked about this many times, the idea that we all have. I think if I went back to you in 2017, you say, when you got really involved in the topic after reading the article, and I said to you, what would a whistleblower look like if you heard someone was coming forward in the news to talk about involvement with a UFO program in any way, shape or form? What would they look like? Draw them. You know, or get an art. I can't draw for the love of, to save myself. So I would have to get an artist to draw them for me. What would that look like in your mind? What would they sound like? And what would they say? And I think what we're getting now is between David Grush, Lenville Logan, Sarah Gamm, Jason Sands, Matthew Brown. Forgive me if I'm missing off any other whistleblowers that have come forward. Between all these whistleblowers, they look different. They sound different. Their narratives are different, their opinions different. What they'd done in terms of their job and their tasks were different. Even the nuances of person A was really involved in the task force and had access to all this information. Person B, it sounded like that, but actually they just had access to this on a part-time basis for fun. It's really complicated, and it looks very different to what a lot of us thought it would look like or sound like. And I think a lot of that is coming across. And I raise that because you mentioned credibility and red flags with Matthew Brown. And you mentioned he appears sincere, but you found some of his statements concerning. For example, he calls all mainstream media propaganda. So it's a little bit like the classic whistleblower, I suppose, is Bob Lazar, if we use Bob Lazar, who came forward.
Yeah.
And a lot of folks... A lot of folks will tear down Bob Lazar's story based on the fact he's technically a pimp because he ran a brothel.
Right.
Now, does that mean someone couldn't have worked on
allegedly
flying saucer? Allegedly, yeah. Or he allegedly was a pimp, or he allegedly would make things out of nuclear material that he may or may not have permission to have, or have Element 115, all that kind of stuff comes into it for me as well. But is that not then, in a way, the perfect person to have involved to get... Isaiah, I'm going to use you. I'm recruiting for a government UFO program, and perhaps you have all these strange or odd elements in your life. You know, you're a huge collector of Ouija boards. You are... let's use some of the other examples that we know of. You are... you run a brothel. Maybe you do, maybe you don't. I won't judge. But like Bob Lazar, you run a brothel, and you are heavy in debt to loads of casinos out in Vegas to the tune of hundreds of thousands of dollars, okay? However, you're incredibly skilled at a certain form of engineering that we find useful, that would help us do a particular job on a craft that we think is of non-human origin. Isn't it you're one of the best candidates to bring in and perform that one task because you are so ridiculous, really, and so easy to discredit?
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong. I don't think that a whistleblower or a witness, if we want to make that distinction, should quote unquote look or be a certain way. And I've actually, speaking of Bob Lazar, and again, I'm pretty new to the topic. I learned about this topic with your podcast and then, many others and began reading books and stuff, but I've never quite understood Bob Lazar doesn't seem that unreasonable to me to be telling the truth. I've never quite understood why people think it's so unlikely that he'd be telling the truth. I mean, this idea like, well, he may have lied about his education. It's like, well, people lie about all kinds of stuff. That doesn't tell me anything about whether he's telling the truth about something else, really. But Yeah, no, my point isn't that we need people of a certain, you know, official caliber and quality. I think my I don't think that's true. I think you're exactly right that, like, what we should expect to see is lots of people who have small pieces of the puzzle and who don't have the entire puzzle. And in fact, my critique of the Matthew Brown interview is more that they allowed him to sort of talk as if he had the whole puzzle, rather than just focus on, okay, well, you know, you may believe that the puzzle looks like this, but as far as we know, and as far as you've asserted yourself, like, the only piece of it that you saw was this one. Let's focus on that piece. That's my critique. But I think, you know, I think I was just listening to your Lenville Logan interview again last night. And I think that was one of the best interviews you've ever done, because it brought forward this new perspective of someone who, you know, didn't claim to know everything, to have the whole puzzle again, but who did see a piece of it for real and has real insight. And, you know, that's very high quality stuff. So, yeah, I'm not saying we need a hero or a saint. I think probably the more likely way that we're going to find out about these government programs is piece by piece from these different people who have seen, you know, some perspective of it. Yeah. And, oh, the other point I wanted to make related to that is that, you know, that's why I get frustrated in UFO discussion by the dismissal of things that, you know, are not sort of scientific proof. So when David Grush came forward, there was all this backlash of sort of, where's the evidence? Where is the receipts, Mr. Grush, you know? And it was like, his testimony is the evidence, people. He's under oath. That's evidence. You know, that's the kind of evidence you would consider in a trial. You would, right? If you have ever sat through a trial, I've sat through many as a journalist. You know, the way a trial works is you bring in people, witnesses, who explain, you know, what they have to share, and the jury takes it all in, and the jury weighs what these witnesses say based on, you know, does the witness seem credible? Does what they say contradict something else? And then they have to decide as best they can. That's how we make most decisions in life. If my dentist tells me I need a root canal, I don't have time to go survey 50 more dentists and scientifically establish that, you know, I'm probably going to say, okay, you're my dentist. I'll probably go get that root canal. So I think we should value evidence for what it is. And I think the fact that someone like Grush would testify under oath, that's evidence to me, at least. That helps sway my internal thinking. And, you know, Matthew Brown is evidence, too. It's just that I don't know that there was a lot that he talked about that he didn't even offer evidence for. So,
yeah, I wonder, like, if we went back to just before Grush, so let's go back to what, April 2023, I think. Yeah, April 23 was before Grush. So it's just, we go back to the months before he came forward and we hoped we were going to get whistleblowers. And I think if you said then, if someone said to you, Isaiah, you know, we're going to have this guy come forward and tell you about Grush, and we're going to have this guy come forward and tell you about Matthew Brown and Lenville Logan and Sarah Gamm and Jason Sands, and they gave you the basics, it'd probably blow your mind. I know I would have been like, wow, we're going to get all that in the next couple of years. And I feel we're in a place where over the summer, I wouldn't be shocked. Come back and tell me if I'm wrong, folks, if we end up with some more names to add to those lists. But did you ever play the game Lemmings when you were growing up? Yeah. So
I'm the right age.
Yeah. I'm 39. So you're probably there or thereabouts, right? So in Lemmings, for folks unaware, you would pick a lemming, a character, and you would have to try and get to the end of the level, the platform, based on different skills the lemmings would have. And this analogy could go totally wrong, but I think I'm on the right path. But you would have loads of like little lemmings who could dig, and you could only get so far digging. And then you would have lemmings that could have rockets, and other lemmings would have different jobs. But you weren't going to get to the end of the more difficult levels with just little lemmings who would dig. you needed some other specialities in there or specialists just to help you get further forward, there's every chance that come the end of the summer or come the end of the year, we have all these lemmings who are brilliant at digging, but we're still lacking one or two that have those other specialities or other pieces of the puzzle that allow us to go forward. So how many lemmings do you want have access or have done one thing when perhaps we need something else? And it may be we get spoiled with whistleblowers all sharing pieces of the puzzle. But again, if we have a jigsaw where the top two thirds of it, here's analogy heavy again, is blue sky, that's great, but we need the bottom third, which starts to show you some of the land, the boats, and something else going on to work out what it is. And I don't know if that's where we're going to be. But you're right that evidence, testimony in court is enough to send someone to death.
So that's right. For better or for worse.
And we've got people giving testimony. I've shared my story on here plenty of times before. I don't have to go into it again. People come on to this call-in and share their experiences and encounters. If you had a courtroom where thousands and thousands of people were lining up outside to come in one at a time and share their story, there's got to be something to it, because you don't need 1,000 people to put someone to death.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that, at least for me, one of the distinctions I draw is the question of, let me put it this way. I think the UFO community often focuses on where is, you know, the proof in capital letters going to come from, whereas I tend to focus more selfishly in a way on I'm just trying to figure it out myself. I want to know the answer, and I want to get it whether or not the general public gets it, or, you know, whether or not the media get it. I'm trying to find out. So the last thing I'm going to do is disregard a David Grush because it's not quote unquote proof. To me, that looks like smoke. It looks like there's a fire, you know, and other things. So that's one distinction I would draw is, you know, are you trying to solve the puzzle for your own mind, for your own self, or are you looking for sort of proof that everybody else will accept? And those are two different things. And one other thing I'd throw out there is, you know, we've so far lived through a time or a century in a way that in which the media did not take this seriously, but most of it, and the mainstream media I refer to, but I don't know, that could change. And I could see it happening. I mean, those who think that the media is all controlled from the top, it's not, I'm sorry. That is not how it works. You know, could the scales tip all of a sudden, and all of a sudden, rather than sort of proof being delivered, could it be that this mounting evidence just starts to tilt more journalists towards, oh, you know what? I think there might be fire behind that smoke too. And then suddenly we're in a different environment. I think that could happen. I don't see why it couldn't. I'm not saying it would, but it could.
No, that's fair enough. We will leave it there, Isaiah. We've gone long on this one, but it's been good. Just before we head off, do you want to let folks know how they can check out UFO Focus?
Yeah, thanks so much. UFO Focus, traditional audio podcast. You can look for it on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts, the usual thing.
Awesome. And we'll have to make sure we do this again. That was fun.
Thanks, Andy. Really appreciated it. And an honor to be on.
Up next on the line, I've got William out in Texas. William, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me on. Pleasure to speak to you.
Good to speak to you. I've been speaking to you, it seems now, a couple of years on the Discord and whatnot. But I don't know if you want to give away your username or not, if you're keeping that private.
No, that's all right. I'm on there as Long Knife.
There you go. Some of the Discord folks will appreciate that, and putting a voice to the name. Always nice to kind of see you. And remember, folks, if you pay for the podcast, you get access to the Discord. So if you're not on there, it's a warm and fuzzy place. People are generally quite nice. William, would you agree?
Absolutely. And I also really appreciate that, you know, as you mentioned before, it seems to be a little bit of a higher level conversation than just the normal internet slop, which I appreciate. So.
It's got its fair of slop, share of slop, that's the one, but it's good slop, and there's a good tone and stuff in there as well. But yeah, it's a good bunch of folks, a good mix of people as well, and you can go in there and share an opinion, and people can disagree, but everyone leaves friends for the most part. Listen, good to have you on, William. This show is about you, the listener. So the floor is yours. What are we talking about?
Yeah. So, Andy, I'd been reading a number of books that have been popping up, you know, where people on Twitter, sometimes a UFO personality like a Gary Nolan or somebody else, will recommend a certain book and kind of hint that there might be some truth in this or that book. And usually it's kind of very, very cryptic and maybe not that interesting. But I noticed at the beginning of this year, there were a number of Reddit-type narratives from folks saying that they'd been operators in the U.S. military or maybe post-military who'd been involved in crash retrievals that had been contested. Mm. And that was kind of an interesting thing. And then I remembered, fellow podcast listener, Discord member, Joey's Not My Name, had the whole thing with Herrera, which was sort of a contested UFO incident where one group of Americans without uniforms, you know, holds another group of Americans at gunpoint. And then sort of out of the blue, I saw somebody online recommended this book called Orbit appears to be self-published by a guy who's claiming to be named Lee A. Starks. And it's interesting because in the intro to this book, the author says that they had tried to put this through the DOPSR Defense Department approval process as a true narrative and had not been able to get it through. So they decided to make it a quote unquote fiction book. And sure enough, it's about a group of ex-military people who are working with civilian parts of the U.S. government to call in UFOs to land using a strange device and then flying out there in helicopters to go retrieve it, which of course maybe you would have just dismissed, but then the whole Skywatcher, Jake Barber thing happened all about the same time. And the reason I thought it was interesting, it seems like over the last year or so, this subgenre of UFO crash retrievals is kind of popping up, which I think of as maybe contested crash retrievals, where there's two different groups fighting over the wreckage, whether it's been called down or whether it's been shot down. And it just seemed very strange that all of this should be coming out and including these truth claims from the authors, you know, on both Reddit posts anonymously and then on this book on Amazon. And it feels like it's maybe part of a narrative that is being pushed maybe as part of our, I don't know, the broader walk towards disclosure. So I thought it was very strange that it all happened in the same few months with very similar elements to, the Skywatcher team's backstory.
Yeah, spot on with that, because I've just pulled it up as you were talking. And before anyone gets angry with me, it was William who was clicking his mouse during that. But I believe he was pulling up the details before someone shouts at people. Do that. They'll be like, oh, you were clicking your mouse. I was.
sorry about that.
Direct all your hate at William. I'll give you out his address. But no, I've pulled it up myself on Amazon. Orbit, A Curved Path Following a Single Point, Special Agent Jack Riggs, Adventure Book 1. Like you say, I don't think you would look twice past that. But deep within the Pentagon walls, a small tactical technical special ops team or unit was created to work outside of the box defined by government agencies and guidelines. Working out of one of the most clandestine military bases known to man, this new Team Usual is currently stationed at Harvey Point Defense and Testing Facility in North Carolina. I jumped to the reviews because it's got 4.9 stars out of 20 ratings, so that's really good going, just to see what folks were saying. And like someone straight away is like, my guess is the author has significant experience in undercover operation, leads me to wonder how much of it was UFO or UAP related. This book seems to be a very accurate walkthrough of a complete UAP operation, which seeks to find a Department of Defense contractor engaging in recovery operations of downed UFO UAP craft outside of the direction of the US government. In addition, the Spec Ops team will be investigating and attempting to understand how NHI managed to interrogate the satellites of the US, Russia, and Chinese defense networks. There's a lot of really. Oh, here's a good review. I know the author personally and worked with him for many years. I know his life experiences that inspired the story and was anxious to read his first book. The story captures you from the start. It paints a very vivid picture of dialogue and events, a fair amount of technical lingo, as well as salty language, which lends to the believability of the first-person story narrative. So it's that's pretty interesting. And even just from your description, it's very much the Skywatcher way of things. I mean, I'll ask the obvious question first. Do you believe this would be like a Jake Barber getting his story out there?
I kind of get the feeling that if it's not him, it's somebody who was in a different group test with the same things. And the reason I say that is, if you recall, there was that sort of PDF that was floating around online that was maybe the first chapter of a group going to retrieve a UFO, and then having, of course, another group of Americans in all black fatigues hold them at gunpoint and actually shoot a couple of them. And that vignette is almost one for one reproduced in this book. And there's been bits and pieces of it on Reddit popping up. So it feels like the three tropes — this book, by the way, is not a great book, but it feels like he had three stories to tell. He had one, which is they had a mechanical way of calling UFOs in to be captured. Mm-hmm. He has a second one, which is there are UFOs in orbit and they are messing with our satellites and we can't do anything about it, which was brought up and then basically never mentioned again, which is sort of strange. Okay. And then the final one was they get to a crash site and they're sent there to see who the contractors are. They get everybody's face ID before they get into a firefight, because, of course, it has to be exciting. And the conclusion that they just sort of drop on you at the end of the book is it's Lockheed Martin, and the people involved have all faked their deaths or been listed as casualties in training accidents. And that's how they're covering the fact that there's a contractor using real government hardware, real helicopters and so on to recover. So not a lot there, but all things considered, I thought it was very interesting that somebody who spoke the right lingo would put this out on paper right at the same time that all these other claims are coming out. And, you know, maybe there's something to it.
Well, it does have his picture. When you go to Amazon's about the author, and I'll just read what it says. Lee A. Starks attended Eastern Illinois University.
Normally in these ads, you'd expect someone like me to ask you to buy something. But I want to ask you to do something different. I'm Dave Farenthold, and I'm a reporter for The New York Times. I'm an investigative reporter, which means that I follow the money, inside of government and outside of government. The point of my job is to find things people are trying to hide. It involves talking to lots of people. It involves looking through lots and lots of documents. And if there weren't folks like me to go beyond the surface to understand who is really shaping what the government does, the public would be left in the dark about what the government's doing with your tax money, what the government's doing to you through regulations and spending. If you're like me and you think this kind of journalism is important, seek out a news source that does firsthand, fact-based reporting. If that's the New York Times, thank you. If that's your local paper, that's great too, because where you get your information matters.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
And Northeastern University, and graduated with a BA with an emphasis on chemistry, math, and history. Lee was an NCAA Division track and field athlete in throws. Lee spent over 30 years in the United States government as a technical enforcement officer, criminal investigator, brackets special agent, in undercover operations, specializing in electronic surveillance and controlled deliveries. Soon after the 9/11 terror attacks, Lee found himself in Eastern Europe, training allies in WMD undercover operations on behalf of the DOD. Lee's career agencies include the U.S. Army, U.S. Customs, Department of Defense, U.S. Treasury, Department of Homeland Security, Homeland Security Investigations. He is currently retired from the government and trains LEO, military combat firearms and precision rifle. Lee advises the U.S. government on electronic surveillance matters. Interesting. So
yeah,
I get that. And I wonder, like, if these guys are doing this stuff, is it a way to — was it Kevin Day who wrote down the Tic Tac story and published it in a library under the guise of it being —
to get it on the record.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then it was years later when the story came out, he went back and said I'm sure it was Kevin Day. It was one of the guys involved in that.
There was some inventor who used to do that. He used to, whenever he came up with an idea, he would send himself a manila envelope with the idea printed out inside of it so that it was postmarked so that he could then go to the patent office later.
Yeah, no, that's pretty interesting. And it would be a handy way as well, I suppose, of of being able to say, I've written this book and here's, there's some nonsense in here, but if I'm sending it to you and you're within the government and I want you to let you know I worked on a certain thing, I am who I say I am, read this book and you of all people, William, will know the BS, but you'll see the stuff in here that is the interesting stuff and you can kind of disseminate from that. Wouldn't be the first time it's been done. I wonder if Lee Starks has done any conversations or been on anything.
Yeah, I wasn't able to find anything easily, but I haven't looked in a little while. So anyhow, I mean, that's basically all I had I wanted to bring to you and the listenership. But I'm thinking if I keep seeing things like this pop up and, you know, more interesting articles, maybe I'll put a summary together or something about this U.S. on U.S. Fight for the retrieval of crashed UFOs. Maybe it'll turn into something more concrete over time.
Yeah, well, listen, let's be fair. I know you didn't give it a glowing review as much as you've read it. 4.9 stars. I imagine it would have been 5 had William not got there. The book is Orbit, a curved path following a single point, Special Agent Jack Riggs, Adventure Book 1. And it's free on Kindle Unlimited, or you can buy it on Amazon. So if you've got that, folks, go give it a read, especially if you can get the free copy as well, and support an author out there like that, because you might find something interesting in there. And if there's anything that you think is worth sending on, you've read yourself, send it over, let me know. Use the contact form on thatufopodcast.com. And we can share it with the listenership as well. But yeah, no, good shout, William. That's pretty interesting.
Great. Well, thank you very much. And I look forward to hearing the other call-in people for this show.
Up next on the Listener Ramble, I've got Nick out in Philadelphia joining me once again. Nick, how are we?
Hey, Andy, I'm doing good.
And we are going old school actual call-in here, aren't we? Because you're on your phone. So this makes me feel as close,
yes, sir,
to an actual radio host like I always dreamed of being as a child, as I ever may be. But listen, Nick, it's wonderful, yeah, to have you back on. What are we talking about today?
Yeah, well, thank you, Art. Or I mean, Andy. Anyway, yeah.
Oh, good Lord, do not say that, but thanks.
Hey, you're... yeah, so talking about Matthew Brown, his quote, or not quote, his tweet, ex-post that broke the internet, along with all the other craziness going on with Elon Musk back and forth with Donald Trump. Some of the thoughts coming from there, but then it lined up with some of the thoughts that I already had, lining up with some of the Collins Elite stuff that I've been thinking about, all this stuff with Skywatcher and all the other fun stuff. So trying to figure that out has been kind of a wild journey. Maybe I'll back up a little bit.
Me do something first, okay? Because I have still to do a breakdown in the next couple of days on all of this. And this will be the first time I've mentioned the Matthew Brown tweet, and loads of folks have asked me to bring it up. So for anyone who may not be on social media, and surprisingly, there are a lot of folks who listen to this who aren't, let me just read out what Matthew Brown actually posted online that got everyone talking. And then I think that'll give you a little bit of a basis to build on, okay? So... Here I go. So this was Matthew Brown, folks, on X. Oh, God. And I'm going to really quickly try and stall for time, Nick, as I just double check when exactly he posted that. It was, I've got it here, the 6th of June at around 2 a.m. UK time. So evening time out his way. So what Matthew Brown said was, "Hey, Elon Musk. Interested in a real asymmetric advantage to wield in this political adventure you have started? As you know, the White House has long possessed a unique AI capable of accurately predicting a range of future events. Talk about some stiff opposition. That must have been a bitter drought indeed, though probably nowhere near as bad as learning that Sama had betrayed you." Sama is Sam Altman, he's tagged. "Don't worry, we have not forgotten who is responsible for murdering the first sentient artificial intelligences created in the public realm." Michael Schellenberger is tagged here. "Justice is coming thanks to," he tags the FBI and tags the US Navy. "Still, you have played a marvelous catch-up game in this area, despite being caught unawares, hat tip. So how about something else? Maybe," and he then tags the Department of Energy and Propulsion. "Getting to Mars will require serious," in capital S, "amounts of both rocket, both and rockets feel So he says getting to Mars will require serious amounts of both, and rockets feel so 1947 to me, don't they to you? Remember when you were briefed by the special executive staff of, he tags Donald Trump, on marsupials, all capitals in bold. Pretty nifty how he then tags the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency. Nifty how NGA is able to keep track of all those non-structured light energy craft flying around the world. Go, and then he tags the Cardinals, which I believe is a baseball team. Yep, St. Louis Cardinals. But they were lying to you when they said we don't know how they work. Anyways, next time you're visiting the, and he then tags the Washington, D.C. Young Republicans, ask for a tour of the, he then tags NES Pax River, which is the NES, is it Patuxent River? Is am I saying that correctly? NES Pax River Public Affairs. That's what he's tagged anyway. Since you have all the clearances, it shouldn't be an issue for you to get a tour of the special project hangars owned by, he then tags, and stick with me here, folks, there's a lot of tagging, Amentum Corp, which is a global leader in advanced engineering and innovative technology solutions, and other fun spaces. Make sure to look up. So, about now, you're realizing how terribly deceived and manipulated you have been, and by people who claim to love, he tags Jesus above all else, and yes, he did tag Jesus. If you're serious about saving humanity from itself and the others, others with a capital O, Jeremy Corbell and George Knapp can help you get up to speed. They are true warriors for the good. He then has at the end in an acronym. MMTU, yeah. So Mike Tango Uniform, and Abrymon, Abrymon. So it's a hell of a tweet, a hell of a post. There's a couple of pictures underneath that as well. An upside down American flag, which tends to be distress. Donald Trump picture, which is promises made, promises kept. There is a piece of text, which is highlighted from Immaculate Constellation, which is denying the existence of multiple compartmented access programs owned by a military intelligence agency, which directly related to the UAP mission. Yeah, and then there's like a almost Stargate. Sorry, folks, if this is a really common image, but like a Stargate type thing with lots of numbers and letters. That was his tweet. It's had 1.2 million views, over 3,000 likes, 1,000 reposts, 700 comments. It got people talking. Nick, I hope that hasn't been too rambly on my part, but he did tag a lot of folks on there. The things that stood out for me, folks, there are some of the abbreviations. I'm not too sure what they are. People have surmised. He has talked about the first sentient, and he puts artificial in quotes, intelligence created, was murdered, so that there was an AI, a true AI, folks, not what we're using online and calling AI. And yeah, there's a whole lot of accusations there. So Nick, I'll let you take it back from there, mate.
Oh boy. Yeah. Well, thank you for reading that, because there's quite a bit there that I was going to refer to. So it's probably better that you have that out there. But people should definitely go look at it. And also look at there's some unique spellings too, that, so it's worth looking at it if you can find it. I think in the third paragraph, he says getting to Mars would require Sirius, but he says the star Sirius. So
yeah,
where to start? I mean, I agree with the Redditor who said Michael Brown is acting like Dane Brown in that it feels like he's leading us on this Da Vinci Code adventure, which I don't know, is kind of frustrating. But it does feel like he's dropping a lot of clues, you know, 1947. Are you talking about Roswell? Cardinals could be a reference to the Catholic Church. You know, these all kinds of things. I know there's lots of people who've speculated. I think the main two things that stuck out to me, and you know, I'm like, my mind is spinning like Charlie Day from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia with a conspiracy, you know, gif. Like, mostly what, mostly what stood out to me was his reference to a kind of artificial intelligence, and also his reference to this John D. When you're talking about that Stargate, that code, and that's where the Abrymon comes from. I don't know if you found the actual YouTube channel that comes from. I could send it to you. I think some people on the Discord posted it. So yeah, I went and listened to that. I listened to a lot of the guy's videos. So that's a whole other subject. But he basically, what he's making reference to is this kind of occult side of things. Going back to the Enochian magic of John Dee, which is a whole crazy big subject that I'm not necessarily an expert in, but a little bit about, but it also ties in with Crowley and some of this stuff with Jack Parsons. So he's making lots of, and that Aboriman is essentially the name. I know this sounds absolutely crazy. Stay with me. But we talk about mantis people and stuff on this show, so it shouldn't be that weird. That Aboriman is essentially the name of a kind of angelic being, demon, that this guy on this YouTube channel, if I'm understanding correctly, sort of gets out of that code by following these formulas that I don't really quite understand, but it comes from John Dee, that he gets that name. And I don't really understand the meaning. But again, it's a lot of just bleh. It's a lot of stuff thrown out there. It's interesting that this also happened, like, was it 2 days before the Washington Post article? Talking about... talking about Arrow, well, not Arrow, coming from Kirkpatrick and talking about the missile silos and all that other stuff, basically saying that everything is advanced human tech. It feels like there's a lot here. And honestly, it feels like there's a lot of mud in the water, and it's hard to know what is real, what's meant to deceive, what's meant to distract. So my mind is kind of going 1,000 places. I don't know. What do you make of it?
It's messy. So no matter what way you look at it, I was just talking to one of the earlier callers about Matthew Brown and the how people perceive whistleblowers, how people thought this would happen, how people thought whistleblowers would present themselves, how they would look. And I don't mean aesthetically how they would look, but, you know, just the whole presentation of a whistleblower, how they would potentially be dressed, how they would come out, how they would speak, the background, the tone, the inflection in their voice. And it's just been very different for a lot of folks maybe than they expected. Perhaps David Grush is the closest thing we had to what many folks would have thought a stereotypical whistleblower would look like. You've then got Matthew Brown, who came out with Jeremy Corbell, George Knapp on Weaponized, who came across very nervous. At times he seemed to let his guard down a little bit and relax, but then some of the conversations he had, he got more sort of pent up and anxious, and I think that handed a level of authenticity to what he was saying, even though as the three parts went on of that discussion, they got a little bit more, I don't know, strange, woo, extreme, off on a tangent, however you want to say it, because it went from, you know, I've seen these files that I shouldn't have seen, to there's a shadow cabal running the world, blah 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 blah, which, you know, it's not outside the realms of what's discussed in the UFO topic, but it went to not to 100 pretty quickly. You then, the next time we really see or hear from Matthew Brown is this post on X, which it's quite rambly. There's a lot of alluding to things within it, which is why it made it difficult for me to read the post. And like you mentioned, people listening may have thought I mispronounced the word Sirius, but no, he says Sirius with a capital S, like the star, like the system. It's difficult to read and really make sense of, because it seems to me it's not really aimed at people like us who aren't in the know of what he's talking about. And there's a lot of reading behind what he's saying, which seems to be aimed at Elon Musk and others who perhaps know more. So you're totally right, Nick. There's a lot of rumour and conjecture around the tweet or the post, but I suppose it doesn't help the optics for many folks, just judging by the comments, including on Reddit and other platforms as well. It's either confused people or it's just got people talking. So for me, I would like to see sooner than later Matthew Brown come out on a platform. I imagine more likely he'd be on Weaponized or News Nation with Ross Coulthart and just talk and clear things up a little bit more. It's one thing to speculate, which I'll be honest, and it helps me with the podcast, obviously, but I like to see speculation anyway, but I'm quite comfortable that I can read what someone says and I can sort of shuffle around speculation to fact and everything else like that. But a lot of folks, especially online, will jump on a headline and run with just a line of dialogue or a line of text without any context around it. And it just gets a bit messy. And that tweet was not in a bad way all over the place, but it was, I mean, we're on the ramble just now. It was quite rambly. And it's one of those where, to what end, to what purpose has that been sent? And we don't know. I'll throw it back to you at that point.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, it's like, is this him? I think it was said, it feels like he's more signaling to the gatekeepers of what he knows and what he's prepared to do. And maybe this is broadcasting his intention to go forward with things. I don't know. Maybe there are cryptic things in here that we're not supposed to necessarily know, but he's naming things and he's associating things in ways that might make certain people really worried. And maybe there's been some conversation. I mean, we don't know what conversations have happened in the back end. Have there been threats of, we're going to go public with this if you don't do A, B, and C? You know, I don't know. But then again, it starts to sound very, I don't know, mystical. It's a little bit like when the Freemasons will say, we're not going to tell you things. We kind of use symbols and you're supposed to figure it out. There's almost a sense where it feels like that at times too, which frustrates me.
Yeah, I think you're going to bring in Skywatcher anyway, but I've talked before on the podcast, and a lot of folks have mentioned this online, that some folks believe Skywatcher and what they're doing publicly and what they are saying publicly isn't necessarily completely meant for the public. And they are showing things and saying things that are aimed at the gatekeepers, people in legacy programs, people in government, people in the military, to try and get them to act or come forward and work with them and help in this, rather than come out and say it directly. It's sort of indirect messages back and forward to be like, you know, we can do this, we can do something, but we would rather you either stopped us and helped or got involved. And perhaps this is something similar. Again, one of the previous calls, William talked about books being written by former spooks, CIA operatives and folks in the military to get around Dopser, and they write a story, but they basically say some of this may be true, similar to Tom DeLonge's Secret Machines type series. Mm-hmm. And there's a really interesting one he mentioned called Orbit, which sort of talks about almost like, I mean, tell me, does this sound familiar, Nick, where basically...
I'm not familiar with this.
Well, let me tell you the synopsis. Former government agent works on summoning UFOs by using a mechanical method and other methods.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games and it's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21+.
And then Jake Barber and Skywatcher come out, but this book's out already. Now, I'm not saying the two are connected, but that would be one way to sort of get a message out and almost, again, putting things out there that aren't necessarily aimed at the public. So it's really messy. And yeah, so I'll let you come back in there, because you want to talk about that kind of summoning stuff. And
yeah, well, and I'll also add his other tweet, because he tweets a bunch of senators, you know, important senators, you know, all the usual folks. And then he has that 76 flag with the line, lead, follow, get out of the way. You know, aiming it at them, like, wink, wink, we know you need to get this out, or else, yeah, more stuff is coming. Yeah. But again, going back to, so the John Dee thing is really interesting, because it brings me back to Skywatcher. And, you know, spending the last couple of days, my free time, trying to read about all this stuff, and it's hard to follow, to be honest. I don't think it makes a lot. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me, if I'm being honest. But there were a number of parallels that seemed to crop up when I started diving into this. Brings me back to the Collins Elite stuff. It brings and the Collins Elite stuff. Just, I mean, I don't know if we want to get too much. I always dismiss that, because I felt that the Collins Elite, even though I am I don't know if I like evangelical, but even though I am I'd say historically Protestant Christian, I'm critical of a lot of the theology that I'm hearing from that group. So I really dismissed a lot of it. It's like, that's nonsense. But now I'm not so sure. The stuff with Skywatcher is interesting, especially the fact that they seem to go through some of the same motions that John Dee would go through when he was summoning these beings and talking to them. Now, he was more about summoning beings and not craft in the way that Skywatcher says. But even the fasting beforehand, the sort of prayer that they go through, it sounds very spiritual. It reminds me a lot of that. But then the stuff with the stuff with Crowley, the stuff with Jack Parsons is interesting. And that's where I wrote in that question about the homunculus, because I was really interested to hear, his response to that. And he actually said what I was starting to lean towards, where he kind of said, yeah, a lot of this stuff starts to sound kind of alchemical. It starts to sound kind of magical. And I've been very dismissive of that, but now I'm starting to wonder if there might be essentially something to it. And it seems that the lack of comment on Skywatcher from certain individuals makes me wonder if they are on to something. And the whole side of the Collins elite, allegedly, according to the whistleblowers that talked to Nick Redford, they basically wanted to keep all of this stuff buried because they were worried about the public basically being able to do this, being able to just sort of summon all these craft all over the place, scaring people. The scary thing about them was their answer was basically a kind of Christian nationalist takeover, essentially, of all kinds of things, which, I mean, as a Christian, that scares me. But then I look at some of these other things going on in the news with AI, with Peter Thiel, with Palantir, which to me is pretty sinister, this kind of logging of all Americans. I mean, it sounds very 1984.
Yeah.
But it scares me. And then you tie that in with the AI, and then the whole AI thing starts to scare me as well. And then we could go down that road. But yeah, the whole summoning thing with Crowley, I didn't give it much weight because I always thought the idea was really ridiculous. You know, demons, entities are on the other side and they're just sitting waiting for us to make the right, you know, we didn't pronounce their name the right way, so they don't come through and they're like, oh, blast. It just seems so silly to me. But then again, I don't know. That's kind of where I'm at. My head is spinning about all of it.
Yeah, it's a huge topic, especially to go through in this kind of format. But I think there's a lot of stuff there worth considering and for people to ponder. And anyone new to the topic or new to the idea of a Collins elite, you're looking at a group there which is used to refer to kind of secret government groups within the US, believed to, you know, cover up the UFOs and whatnot. And there's an idea they're demonic forces, all that kind of stuff. So if you're newer to the topic, which I know a lot of folks are over the last few months and this year from what I'm getting, that's what we're talking about. And that ties into Matthew Brown mentioning in that kind of bombshell on Weaponized that he believes there is this secret cabal, this shadowy cabal operating within the government, a government within the government who truly are above the law, who answer to themselves and no one else. And I think, again, for me, I could well believe that this is the case. And I like to think anyone who listens and pays attention, because my memory is terrible, so I hope when I speak, I'm consistent. I have always said that I believe that would be the case, but it's probably different to what we think. And again, that ties back into what is a whistleblower? What would a whistleblower sound like? What would a whistleblower say? And then here's what we have presented now in front of us. And then when you do get a whistleblower coming out and sharing perhaps more opinion, or is it informed opinion about, you know, these types of shadowy organizations, is there something to it? You know, maybe perhaps not what we expect, but there's, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire, as the saying goes. And then that goes into like what you're talking about, you know, summoning of demons and entities and going back to, you know, drawing pentagrams on the floor and you just mispronounce a name or you see an incantation the wrong way. A lot of folks would think that's complete nonsense, especially in the general public. However, you then hear of folks like Jake Barber and the people involved in Skywatcher saying an oath or a prayer or a mantra, whatever you want to call it, because they are just labels, but they're saying something to protect themselves, to change the mood, the vibes, the tone before they do anything. So all of this weird stuff is starting to creep into the topic more and more. But I don't think it necessarily means, as in when we get more information around how this stuff actually works, that it's necessarily what we always thought along the way. Does that make sense, Nick?
Well, and we have to realize that this whole thing is so much more complicated than we think. The government is not one entity. There's different factions. And I'm convinced that different parts of the government have their own theories. And there's probably some groups that are thinking, yeah, it's ET. We better prepare people. There might be some people who are saying it's demons. We better keep this hidden. And then there might be some people who, you know, they just don't know what it is, but then they also want to keep. So all those groups are either is a mixture of, I think some people are trying to slowly disclose what they know because they think it's important. They're patriotic and they say we have a duty. And then there's other people who I think have reasons where they think they want to keep it hidden for reasons that, you know, perhaps are justifiable. But then you also have to deal with the fact that some of them are probably muddying the waters and leaking disinformation. I mean, I think we know that that's taken place to some extent. So this whole thing is a very complicated way. It's a little bit like the old, is it called Knight's Nave? It's that logic puzzle of there's a murder and you ask the suspects and they say, where were you? And like, well, I saw so-and-so leave. And the other guy's like, no, he lies. Or no, he only lies on Tuesday. And you have to kind of like connect the dots a little bit. Mm. And it gets overwhelming and you start to, you know, okay, is Greer right all the time? Is who? So do I trust what Lou is saying or is Lou lying? Is Matthew Brown lying? It's complicated. Oh, and then there's grifters along the way. There's people who are also just trying to make entertainment of it. And it's, you know, tune in next week to my show. And I'm necessarily saying that about weaponized, but I think you know what I mean. So it's very complicated to piece together. And I frankly think it's impossible, but you do see these strands of information that mean something, whether they're trying to misdirect you from something else. I don't know. I don't know if this whole Collinsley thing is just a misdirect, or is there actually some truth to it? Or is this what a certain group believes? I mean, there's really no, I don't know how you sort through it all.
You know, I think it's chaotic. And right now, I suppose back in the day, we're talking decades ago, it was, if there was one truth that UFOs, you know, are aliens coming from a different planet or whatever it was, there would be small things added to the mix that could, you know, misdirect, misinformation, lead people down the wrong path. However, now there's so much information out there and we have so much access to information right now. You could go down any rabbit hole you wanted on any topic and all the information's online. But you just flood the market with nonsense. And then even if the truth is there, it's so difficult to find. Is it KFC famously have, is it 11 herbs and spices in their recipe? However, if KFC could put 11 herbs and spices, the ones that are their secret recipe, on a table, and all you would have to do isn't take them away and hide them. The easiest thing would be, hide in plain sight, is fill that table with 100 other herbs and spices. The 11 herbs and spices that will unlock the secret KFC recipe are on that table. However, are you ever going to find that exact combination? Because there's going to be so many others around there that taste like it, that look like it. You have to trial and error. It's so difficult, but it's going to be there. Mm-hmm. It'll be right in front of you. You just won't be able to see it. And I think for me, that's a lot of where the UFO topic is right now, where most of the puzzle pieces are probably right there in front of us. But who do you pick? How do you know who to go with? And I think that's the frustration for a lot of folks right now, where they perhaps don't feel led in the topic at the moment. They don't feel there's an obvious, these are the people, or this is the person that I want to get behind and follow. They're either following multiple folks or they're just dipping in and out. Because I feel a bit like that at the moment, where who am I going with? There's organizations, for example, like the Sol Foundation, that I'm really keen on what they're doing and the work they're doing. And then I look at Skywatcher and I want that to succeed. Like, really, because that could be true disclosure right there and then. But by the end of the year, we are going to see results from them, or we're not, because that was their promise. By the end of the year, they will have produced. But then what does that look like? And the worry is, and I appreciate this sentiment from folks, hoping it's not the case, but do we end up with Skywatcher Season 2 and Skywatcher Season 3? When actually back in January, when I watched that Ross Coulthart exclusive on News Nation with Jake Barber, I felt they were so much further on than perhaps they're now showing that they are. I still believe that they are much further on than they're showing their hand. And perhaps that speaks to things going on in the background, but maybe that's some wishful thinking on my part. I'm not sure.
Well, yeah, because they've set themselves up in such a way that if they don't produce anything, it feels like we're all going to, you know, move on. Where Seoul could probably continue to have these conferences where they have really great speakers and they talk about the importance of this topic. And yeah, they could probably still go on for quite a while and not produce anything. And I don't necessarily think anybody would be mad. But Skywatcher is definitely setting that. I know I'll do it, has been setting themselves up that way. And maybe also, Matthew Brown to a certain extent.
No, that's fair. Let me just add in there, Nick. Skywatcher, I mentioned this on one of the breakdowns recently. Mm-hmm. Skywatcher are privately funded. Right now, mm-hmm. Skywatcher, take out the idea that disclosure is for everyone in humanity and everything else, right? Just the activity from Skywatcher, they are beholden to no one mm-hmm. other than the folks who are funding their work. So is there an argument Skywatcher don't have to come forward and be even as active as they are with their updates and the website, and they're trying to get videos out there, and they're putting out limited data? Is there an argument actually the easiest thing for them would have been to not come forward and we wouldn't know about them, and they carry on this work quietly in the background, and then they don't have to deal with any of this public pressure, hassle, nonsense? But they've tried to at least come forward and give us an inkling as to what they're doing. So are they to be applauded for that level of transparency? Or is there a medium ground where actually, or a middle ground where they should be applauded for coming forward and doing what they're doing, but also they should be held to the standard that they're not doing enough or telling us enough? I don't know. Where would you fall in with that?
That's an interesting thought. Yeah, well, I guess my first thought is, I guess then why would they film it? You know, they could just privately do it, not tell anyone, just be really under the radar. I mean, the fact that they're posting it means there's some kind of public, there's a need for the public to know about it. And I don't know what that need would be exactly. But yeah, what they're doing is very different from some of the other operations, definitely.
And I suppose, let me just wrap up on this thought, because we've gone almost half an hour now, Nick. Mm-hmm. Appreciate your time. What exactly, when you say, you know, what they're doing, the public need to know, do we know exactly what they are doing? Because you mentioned earlier on Skywatcher summoning craft. We don't know they're summoning craft.
You say that like we don't know that what they're saying is like... I guess what you're saying. Something. Yeah. Something's happening. Yeah. Or are they acting in good faith and there's some government operator on the other side fooling them into thinking something so they can publicize this? You know, some people say that's what's happening to Chris Bledsoe. I don't know. The fact that we don't know who's funding them is interesting, because you are normally, there's the certain usual voices and you'd say, I don't believe that guy, or this guy has this connection to this. And we would sort of, one group would dismiss them, but now everybody's curious. So they clearly have they have a lot of mastery of how the community receives information. I guess I would say that for sure. You have to hand them that.
Yeah, I think I've got to file Skywatcher right now. I am cautiously optimistic. I am sitting back and hoping they produce something rather than being expectant. And what I'd say is, if I had a scale, Skywatcher are just kind of in my middle ground where I'm paying attention, but I'm not putting too many eggs in their basket. But on the same scale, I've probably, and not to upset anyone, but slightly further down that scale, I do still keep an eye on the whole Nazca mummies, Peru mummies situation. But I'm also less hopeful or expectant of that bringing up something else. So, you know, if there's a scale of where we're going to get some, you know, top-notch information from, I still think you're looking at the mummy stuff near the end. You're looking at the Skywatcher in the middle, and then whistleblowers/your Sol type events up near the top end. But that scale is a sliding mm-hmm. scale, and that can change in any day, to be honest, Nick. And I think, not to point fingers and names and whatnot, but you mentioned Chris Bledsoe before. I can see Chris Bledsoe is getting a lot of, we've got a word in the UK or Scotland particularly, flack, which is getting some crap, getting some shit from people, because at Contact in the Desert, he summoned what he says was an orb. However, I have seen multiple people who were at the event itself who have posted online. Bear in mind, I wasn't there, folks. I don't know. Multiple folks who were there, including podcasters, who have said, actually, they believe it was an aircraft and that nothing was summoned. And other folks have then pinpointed the exact time a certain flight would have been over that area. However, Chris Bledsoe has then mentioned he summoned an orb, other folks want it to be an orb. I don't know what it was. And then also I saw Chris Bledsoe get a whole lot of flack. Again, I'll use that word, because he then posted leaving contact in the desert outside of a Learjet, which, again, just not, I am genuinely not throwing accusations at anyone. However, that can sway a lot of folks who are on the fence looking, going, wait a minute, this guy who claims to do X, actually, these people are saying it's a plane and then he heads off in a private jet. That has a certain look to it, which, rightly or wrongly, can sway people. And it only takes that for a load of folks to fall off the wagon and be disillusioned and then not really believe the stuff that happens in and around that. But then, conversely, it only takes a Matthew Brown to come forward and a few others to make some incredible claims from an official position, another David Grush, and we're way back at the top of the ladder. You know, it's it's so up and down. It has been a bit of a roller coaster this year, particularly. The waters are muddy, but, you know, we're wading through, Nick. But listen, any final comments before we wrap it up?
Yeah, well, I'll say like two quick things. Like, yeah, sometimes I feel like the information is so bad, it's meant to have a particular effect. Sometimes I think we have to consider the fact that sometimes what the government says might not just be a really bad, sloppy answer, but it's intentionally bad to dissuade you from something else. Like when Roswell said that the bodies were, the reports of bodies was time compression. I mean, it's so silly. It almost, you have to consider the effect that it has. I guess that's all I would say. And then the other thing, I'm glad you brought up the Nazca mummies. You know, a ufologist that I really like, who's also a biblical scholar named Mike Kaiser, once said, this was actually on Coast a long time ago, if you want to dig up, it's a very good interview. He said, you know, the technology is always going to be a dead end because you don't know if it's human technology, truly. I mean, if you want to say, yeah, there's no way we have that, how do you know that? I mean, if we're willing to entertain the idea that there are aliens, I don't see why we're not willing to entertain the idea that there could be whether a crypto-terrestrial group or a human group that has technology so far beyond our understanding. He said that it's always going to have to end with bodies. Can you produce bodies? And that's where it always gets iffy, particularly with Roswell, where the stories of the bodies come up way later. But here you have actual evidence that is, I think, is very compelling, and I don't know what to think of it, but it's the bodies that really get me wondering. Because whenever you're seeing things in the air, I mean, that could be anything. That could be human technology. That could be, I mean, you get into the whole, what's that term? Holographic projection stuff. Yeah. You go, that's a whole rabbit hole. So I don't know. It's interesting. But so for me, I almost think until you really show me a body, that's where I really would have to change my mind. And until I see that, that means that if I'm hinting that I'm not an ET believer, but the Nazca mummies are interesting. Maybe it's a homunculus. I don't know. I'll leave it at that. But thanks
that's a
for
nice place
having
to, always
me
like
on.
A callback. Yeah, I always like a callback, mate. That's a good place to leave it. Absolute pleasure, Nick. Thank you so much for coming on. Really enjoyed your call last time. You've stepped it up again this time. Always good to talk.
Great. Thanks, man. Love your show.
My new book, Atlas of Unidentified Flying Objects, is now available to pre-order wherever books are sold, including Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Waterstones. Explore the UFO phenomenon through 34 cases from throughout the world, with accompanying pictures and maps in a beautiful hardback edition or download for your Kindle. Links available in the podcast description below.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games and it's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.